Investment Committee of Thursday, March 17th, 2022 is called to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Chair Lee. Chair Lee.
He's on the elevator.
Vice Chair Murphy.
Present.
Murphy present. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Erdahl present. Representative Abaje.
Present.
Abaje present. Representative Berg.
Present.
Berg present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen present.
Hansen present. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Hewitt present. Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Lilly present. Representative Lucero.
Sipping my green tea.
Lucero present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Moran present. Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Pearson present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Raleigh present. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Rasmussen present. Representative Ryer.
Ryer present.
Ryer present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. Representative Zhang.
Here.
Zhang present. And Chair Lee. I'll note when he arrives here. Vice Chair Murphy, you have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Representative Erdahl, will you move the approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 10th? Will someone that's looked at the minutes for Thursday, March 10th, please move for approval?
Madam Vice Chair, I move the minutes for March 10th. This is Hewitt.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Hewitt moves the approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 10th. Are there any objections? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Hearing ayes, the minutes are approved for Thursday, March 10th. Members, today we are hearing presentations on capital investment projects for underserved communities. As is our custom, bills will be heard on an informational basis. It is a very long agenda, and each bill presentation is allotted 6 minutes. We will get started now with Representative Gomez's bill, House File 3419. Good morning, Representative Gomez, and welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you so much for having us here today. House File 3419 is an allocation for the Dreamland on 38th Street project, which is a project of the Cultural Wellness Center and builds on their expertise in advising business startups and extends their entrepreneurship work beyond the Midtown Global Market, where they are a co-owner right now. The Global Market has been an incubator of a number of businesses owned by BIPOC people, by women, by immigrant entrepreneurs, and they have demonstrated expertise in this area. Before I turn it over to my testifier, I just wanted to share a little bit about the Cultural Wellness Center's work in South Minneapolis. They are a well-established nonprofit that does community development work rooted in culture. They're an African-American-led organization, but over the years have really provided a space for our multicultural communities in South Minneapolis, to deepen their work, to deepen their relationships among and across culture, as well as within our own cultures. This project's really exciting. It's on the 38th Street corridor, which is designated as a cultural corridor by the city of Minneapolis. And it was because of restrictive covenants, racial covenants put on deeds in the city of Minneapolis. This was really one of the first areas where Black people were able to purchase homes in the city. And so back in its time, this area and this space where Dreamland on 38th is going to come into fruition was, you know, really the anchor of the African-American community in Minneapolis. And so I thank you for the consideration, and I have a testifier who's gonna share a little bit more specifics about the project. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Representative Gomez, will you clarify for me, please? Is Dreamland on 38th on 38th now?
So the space, the site is there, yes. And there is a small building there right now, but the project calls for clearing the site and building a new building in its place. But it is, yeah.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes, good morning, Representative Murphy. How are you?
I'm just fine on this wonderful St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you. And really, thank you all, and great to see many of you. So, like I said, the Cultural Wellness Center has really been anchored in South Minneapolis for over 25 years. And we have really built a legacy and a set of relationships based on the idea that culture is a foundational asset for community building. We started our work early on looking very specifically at healthcare and equity, and looked at education and equity, and found ourselves in the global market as a co-owner there, looking at ways to support a higher level of failing businesses in BIPOC communities, and specifically the African-American community. Our project on Dreamland and 38th Street began as a very small project at the corner of 38th and 3rd Avenue South. And we were really thinking about something very small, but as we looked into the history, what we found is that in 1938, a community member, Anthony B. Cassius, opened a business called the Dreamland Cafe that was actually the first integrated restaurant in Minneapolis. He was the first Black-owned liquor license, and this was the foundation of an African-American economic district that would emerge there. In his autobiography, he actually uses the language related to social impact businesses in 1938, and understands the impact at this point. That area grows, he opens a number of more businesses, but the corner of 38th and 4th becomes a vital economic entity in the African-American community. There are strong ties between this community and the Rondo community, which many people are definitely have heard of, but the legacy of the area 38th and 4th is not always known. And again, in this area was the development of the first federally funded housing offering with FHA loans that actually went to African Americans as well. So the legacy here is strong. The Dreamland project itself is actually going to be a significant development. It's going to be a 5,000 square foot building that we are looking at using something that we have discovered as culinary heritage, because we see a significantly high number of culturally based businesses choosing food as an entrepreneurial pursuit. And so we see a special opportunity to support them in this. We are launching what we are calling a co-cafe. It is going to be a developmental incubator that is actually a co-working space where we will be incubating between 6 and 10 entrepreneurs at a given time. And we believe that we'll be creating roughly 20 plus new jobs per year in this location, and really drawing roughly 5,000 people annually to the possibility of having community-based events, supporting and growing these entrepreneurs. This project is going to be a total of a $10 million project. And we, again, see this is something we will leverage in terms of economic benefit for the community through our practice of hiring, again, BIPOC-led construction, architecture firms, and then more importantly, supporting this along the boulevard. This has grown from not just a building, but to catalyzing an area. So now Dreamland on 38th is a concept that we believe is exciting because it actually is catalyzing new development and new economic vitality all the way to Chicago Avenue, which we all know has now been renamed George Floyd Square. So 38th, Dreamland on 38th is really a project that we are very happy that you are considering because of the economic impact it will have on the community, because of the activation of a legacy economic district focused on African-American wealth building, families, and generational wealth.
Thank you very much, Mr. Taylor. We will hold this bill over. Representative Gomez, House File 3419 for possible inclusion in the bonding bill. Ms. Nash, could you remind me, were we supposed to have started with Representative Moran?
No, we shifted the agenda a little bit. So the next bill is actually another Representative Gomez bill.
Okay. And we can go forward with that at this time.
Yes.
Okay, House File 3928 is next on the agenda. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Murphy.
Quickly.
Yes. I just see that Representative Erdahl does have his hand up. I don't know if you want me to go first.
I don't see that. But Representative Erdahl? Do you have a question on House File 3928?
No, Madam Chair. I just have a real quick general comment, and that is I think a lot of these bills are asking for cash, so that will be my assumption as we go through them today that these are cash bills. If it isn't, I'm asking the presenter to please let us know that it's a GO or some other type of funding. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gomez, House File 3928.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and apologies, Rep. Erdahl, that I didn't cover that in my previous bill. This morning, I'm excited to share this proposal from Parents in Community Action, or PICA. It's a request for $6 million in cash to renovate their existing workforce development facility. PICA was founded by Head Start parents 50 years ago, and they have 13 centers in Hennepin County that serve 2,500 children and families. And this funding will support increasing childcare classrooms at PICA's Minneapolis Training Center and will increase the capacity of their workforce development initiatives. Their model that they have on Third Avenue really increases teacher diversity for early childhood education through their lab school dual functioning model. During a program year, about 200 people complete one or more of their workforce development programs. And this will bring that up to up by 128 trainees. So PICA is the largest trainer of teachers of color in Minnesota, and they currently are serving 13% of all early Head Start eligible infants and toddlers in Hennepin County. So this is a great way for us to support our kids and our emerging teachers of color. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you. And you have Mr. Alexander with you?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair, if he could share a little bit with us.
Sure. Mr. Alexander.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Gomez. Good morning, Chairperson Murphy and committee members. My name is Rico Alexander. I'm the Executive Director of Parents and Community Action. We currently provide comprehensive early childhood services to over 2,500.
We're kind of getting an echo. Excuse me, Mr. Alexander. We're kind of getting an echo and a bounce back.
Okay. Let me try something here.
Can you hear me? Is that a little
better? That's much better.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. We currently provide comprehensive early childhood services to over 2,500 infants, toddlers, preschoolers, and pregnant mothers in Hennepin County. In addition, we have over 52 years of experience of training and workforce development programming. PICA is requesting funds to renovate its early childhood facility in Minneapolis in an effort to expand our lab school and consolidate all of our training programs under one roof. The $6 million state funding request the $6 million state funding in request will cover about 75% of the total project cost of $8 million. The remaining 25% of the funding for the project has already been secured from multiple funding sources. FICA has supported hundreds of individuals from low-income, diverse backgrounds in obtaining certificates and credentials, which include child development associates, bachelor's and master's degrees, commercial bus driver's license, food service manager certifications, and family service credentials, which all lead to living wage jobs. Our staff is racially and ethnically reflective of the children that we serve. 88% of our staff of over 400 are people of color. 52% of our staff are current or former Head Start parents. 100% of our teachers have college degrees, most of whom acquired it with the support of FICA and its training programs. FICA is fiscally and programmatically sound with over 40 years of property management experience in building and renovation. We currently operate 14 locations throughout Hennepin County, and we maintain all of them in excellent condition. FICA has a long-term collaborative agreement with the Minneapolis Public Schools and other districts in our service area, health and dental entities, homeless shelters, chemical dependency programs, and multiple other service providers, as well as colleges and universities. We are one of only 9 of over 2,000 Head Start programs nationwide designated as the National Head Start Program of Excellence. Committee members and Chair, Chairperson Murphy, I urge you to support House File 3928. This will allow FICA to continue the job providing supportive pathways to work for our most disenfranchised populations. With me now, I'd like to introduce to you Adriana Paston Diaz. She's one of our teachers who has been successful in obtaining multiple credentials and certifications through PICA's professional development and training programs.
Ms. Diaz.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson Murphy and community members. My name is Adriana Paston Diaz, and I'm a Head Start teacher at Parents and Community Action in Minneapolis. I'm here to tell you my story and how my family and I have benefited from PICA. I was born in Mexico and raised by my grandparents. My family at that time consisted of my husband, my daughter, and a baby on the way when we moved to Minnesota in 2005. I got a job at a restaurant and one of my coworkers told me about PICA. I enrolled my children shortly after. When I started volunteering in my child's classroom, the teacher told me about becoming a parent trainer, not knowing at that time that this would be the beginning of my teaching career here at PICA. I started my parent training in 2010, working in the infant and toddler room. Well, in the infant and toddler room, I learned so much about the development of young children. This experience not only helped me get a glimpse into working with children in the classroom, but it also gave me the insight of the development of my own children, especially being a young mom. After completing my hours of parent training, I decided that this was something I wanted to pursue. So I applied to be a parent intern in PICA internship program working with infant and toddlers. I work full-time in an early Head Start classroom learning what it takes to become a teacher, how to do a lesson plan, and interacting with children. During this time, as part of the internship, I was able to attend PICA CVA program. After completing both my CVA and my internship, I was hired to be a teacher at PICA. I am very lucky to work in a very diverse program where the staff reflects the children and families, both in culture and language. Having the diverse teachers is very important to me for the children. I wanted my children to be with teachers who look and talk like them. I would also like to point out that I graduated in 2019 from the Minneapolis Community and Technical College with financial support through PICA and become the first in my family to attain a degree in college. My life has changed so much being a part of PICA. And as a teacher of color, I see the impact I have with my children in my classroom and being a role model for them. My children had that experience at PICA, and I want that for other children as they continue their education. Because of the opportunities I was given, I now have the teaching credentials, a full-time living wage job, a security knowing that I have the skills, knowledge, and desire to make this world better for children and family. My story is living proof, and with that, I ask you to support House File 3928. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will hold this bill over House File 3928 for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, Representative Gomez. Thank you, Mr. Alexander and Ms. Diaz.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is House File 3882, Representative Hassan. And we're behind 2 minutes.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I will save you 2 minutes. How about that?
Thank you. That's a deal.
All right. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present House File 3882, which is an ask for $10 million cash for a new building for the Somali Museum of Minnesota. As you know, Minnesota has the largest Somali community outside of Somalia, and this specific museum is the only museum in the world dedicated to collecting and preserving the history and culture of Somali people. With that, Madam Chair, well, I have two testifiers, and I will just ask them to be super short, and we'll stand for questions if there are any.
Thank you. Please present. Is it Mr. Noor?
It's Ms. Noor.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan and the committee members. My name is Nawal Noor. I am the founder and CEO of Noor Companies. My role in this project is we're a BIPOC social enterprise developer. We're going to be developing this project. We've been working with the Somali Museum and the executive directors here to present as well. As Representative Hassan has mentioned, the project has been in the works for the last 10 years. The Somali Museum is an organization with an incredible asset to Minnesota. The organization has the support of many partners in all the neighborhoods that are adjacent, all the education institutions. In fact, I think the executive director is on the road to Wayzata today to do a presentation for that community, and public and private partners, including the Minnesota History Center. The Somali Museum is the only museum in America and in the world. The one that existed in Somalia was destroyed as part of the Civil War. It's devoted to the preservation of traditional East African and Somali artifacts and folklore. It has a collection of over 1,500 artifacts, of which only 300 are displayed at the Lake Street location, which is a rented space, and the rest are housed at the Minnesota History Center and a number of other places. This museum serves as an educational institution. All the materials are connected to the Somali community. It's got a lot of programming for youth and for some Minnesotans to come and learn about the culture. The Somali Museum was started in 2011 as a public gallery, and it's currently housed on Lake Street in that rented space. This project aims to create space for exhibition and distribution of Somali culture in Minneapolis and in the world. It's going to be the only museum in the world of its kind that's home to the large Somali population outside of Somalia. The Somali Museum is requesting funds to build a new historic and one of only the only kind of museum that houses these artifacts. It's a place for people to come and education for Minnesotans to learn the culture and connect to the community. This facility will also provide workforce development training for elderly that do weaving in their houses today. And so we'll create a place for them to come in and do a clearly learning for the community. It will have classrooms for students, educational programming for schools and private and public institutions. The museum does all of those things today, but it goes to these places instead of people coming because they don't have enough space to host any of the people that do need to learn about the Somali culture. The museum also has traveling troops, and they go and they hold an annual event that hosts about 2,500 people, the last of which was hosted prior to the pandemic at the Northrum Auditorium. It was sold out in 2 hours after they had the event. It's a place for also that it's going to be for food production. We have a cafe in there that will have Somali food, which I think a lot of you, I hope, will get to experience and maybe have already experienced some of the Somali food, including sambusa. The total project cost is $18 million. We're asking for $10 million. The rest of the project sources are Newmark's tax credit, public and private philanthropy, and of which they just started fundraising, and $500,000 is already committed to this project. We're working with the city of Minneapolis for the site. It's 2600 Minnehaha. And We're asking for your support for this project, and we appreciate all the representatives that have met with us previously, and we thank you. And I'd like to make sure that Executive Director Osman has an opportunity to present as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Noor. Where are you located today? Where are you speaking from?
It is my office, but the background that I have is we are a BIPOC developer and a contractor, and this project is the historic Hosmer Library in South Minneapolis in Central Neighborhood, very close to where the 38th Street is, and right across to Sabathini community. We did a historic preservation on that project a couple years ago, working with Hennepin County, and we won an AIA award for that project. And so it's a Carnegie Library. It's 100 year old. It's one of my favorite projects, so I always have that as a background.
It's very intriguing. Thank you. Thank you very much. Director?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and the committee, and thanks for everyone who's supporting the Somali Museum of Minnesota. Really, right now I'm in front of Wayzata Elementary School, and the whole week I was from school to neighborhood. We are presenting the Somali culture and giving educational to different people to know more about the Somali community, because we have the largest Somali immigrant here in the United States, so that we creating kind of understanding between the communities and teach them the Somali culture. And because of time, I'm gonna save the time and say everything that Noel said, and you know, Hodan is the final, and thank you for your support, and thanks for everyone who's gonna take part of this, you know, institution. It's a legacy. So imagine when you are in a rent space and the landlord asks you to step out and leave the space because he needs space, and you take this institution to an storage. It's something that's uncomfortable and doesn't satisfy anyone in Minnesota. So thank you so much, and thanks for your support.
Thank you, Director Austin. Thank you, Ms. Noor. And Representative Hassan, you did very well, except we're still a minute behind.
Well, thank you. We're going to leave you now.
Thank you. A deal was made. A deal was had. Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will consider your wishes for this great museum. Representative Dabney, House File 4088. And maybe you can help us make up a minute and a half.
Well, it was just a minute ago, Madam Chair. How did it get to be a minute and a half?
Deals are deals.
All right. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. It's my privilege to present House File 4088 this morning. Over the past 2 years, U.S. Bank has reevaluated its physical needs in my community in the face of significant changes in how people engage in banking over the past several decades. They've made the generous decision to donate its large parcel fronting on East Lake Street, the major cultural and commercial corridor in South Minneapolis, to a longtime and trusted statewide community institution, CLUS, Comunidades Latinos Unidas en Servicio, for an economic opportunity and wellness hub. This East Lake Street location is proximate to a significant and growing Latinx community. The parcel, which will be owned by CLUS, is being developed to also provide space for a Native American-led nonprofit and two Black-led retail and housing spaces, all reflecting the rich diversity of my community. Committee members have a document in their packets outlining the project, and House File 4088 requests $10 million from the state's general fund in support of this project. With me, Madam Chair, is Ruby Lee, President of CLUS.
Welcome, Ruby Lee.
Good morning. Thank you, everyone. Good morning, Madam Chair and Representative Downey. Thank you for carrying our bill and representing your neighborhood and your community. Very excited to be here. My name is Ruby Lee, for the record, President of CLUS, Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio. CLUS is Minnesota's largest Latino-led nonprofit, founded 40 years ago and serving over 35,000 people annually. and one-stop hubs in St. Paul, Minneapolis, and now with small shops in Wilmer and Austin, Minnesota. Today, 140 staff and over 600 volunteers provide access and opportunities through multi-generational holistic services that foster neighborhood and cultural development in these communities. Health and wellness, food, education, certifications, technology, training, and economic prosperity building for families and community. CLUS has provided services in Minneapolis and outreach in the last 30 years. We have not had the opportunity to own our own space. We have leased space along Lake Street for the last 25 years. Our staff and services have grown, and we have been forced to split into different rental locations throughout Minneapolis. We are looking to build a permanent home where we can bring back all services under one roof and one-stop hubs, as it is part of our work. Our proposal also contributes toward the local neighborhood recovery and the redevelopment on Lake Street. Last fall, as Representative Dabney said, U.S. Bank selected CLUS and two other nonprofits as beneficiaries of a donation of their property on Lake Street. We are very excited to present our proposal and seek your support to build our own new home, economic opportunity, and wellness hub in 2800 block of Lake Street. Funding will support the pre-design, design, and construction and equipping of this one-stop hub in Minneapolis. People will have greater access to holistic integrated bilingual services, including adult and youth education, workforce training, employment, support services for many of the contracts that we provide at CLUS today in partnership with the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County, specifically dislocated worker programs, workforce skills, retooling, retraining, reskilling, employment services, MFIP, and microbusiness development. Along with that, CLUS provides support services that are essential for workers today. Housing, food, or at least healthy food with free services on a weekly basis, as well as behavioral health. CLUS has expanded into community health, behavioral health clinics, which now provide easier access to communities to have all services in a holistic way for adults, elders, young people, and children mental health. The one-stop hub will increase access to holistic multi-generational family support services and equitable access for people from Minneapolis and surrounding cities to thrive. This project is a unique opportunity for all of us and for the state to redirect resources to community and help us rebuild an area that merits redevelopment and support. That concludes my presentation. I stand for questions if available.
Thank you very much, Representative Dabney. Thank you very much, Ms. Lee, the CEO of this great celebrating 40 years.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Number 8 on the agenda is House File 3221, Representative Mariani.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you, Representative Dabney, for catching us up. Now it means I got 10 minutes to present.
No, it does not. We still are behind 1 minute.
Well, Madam Chair, I will be brief. This is a cash $7.5 million request to acquire land, pre-design, design, and build expansion of a vital center meeting the needs of our metropolitan areas, communities of people with disabilities. The Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, it's the major premier provider, trainer, and advocate for professionalization of personal care services to people with disabilities. It's located in the northern part of my district, which means it's just a few blocks from the Capitol. Its clientele, both served and individual providers, are primarily people of color and indigenous people. I urge the members to see this at this request as a way to both enhance the services to people with disabilities from all racial ethnic communities and as an economic development effort in further developing the marketable skills of individuals providing those services. I believe this legislature should value those professional pursuits. Here to share more is Mr. Jesse Bethke, Executive Director of the MCIL.
Representative Mariani, will you tell us again what the ask is?
Of course, Madam Chair. It's a $7.5 million request, and it's a cash request.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bethke, welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. I'm Jesse Bethke Gomez, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani. We really thank you for House File 3221. Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, now in its 41st year, is a statutory nonprofit by way of the federal government and Minnesota Statute 268A-11, the Centers for Independent Living. We serve thousands and thousands of people with our disability hub, over 28,000 people there in direct services, close to 6,000 people. Metropolitan Center for Independent Living is deeply committed to people with disabilities. 50% of our board members, 50% of our employees are people with disabilities. We're very excited about the work of MCL and making a difference in the lives of all people with disabilities, whether with apparent or non-apparent disabilities. We're grateful to St. Paul Foundation, F.R. Bigelow Foundation, who helped us to secure funding to do a very strong analysis on what is our best way forward in the renovation and expansion of our current facility. We've also conducted a feasibility study as a preparation for this as well. We're also grateful to the Bush Foundation with the Community Innovation Fund. I was one of the three technical writers for the Direct Care Workforce Report that was approved by the Minnesota Olmsted Commission in Olmsted Cabinet in March of 2018. There's this, as you may know, a severe workforce shortage for direct care workers and PCAs. Our project, thanks to Health Force Minnesota, Minnesota State, DEED, DHS, the SCI Union, PCAs, people with disabilities, PCA agencies, we're working on the first ever curriculum that is college credit leading to the credential of a certified PCA. This is the first opportunity for over 70,000 PCAs in the state of Minnesota. And what does this mean? This is as much about economic justice for people to make that livable wage, having that credential, and being able to make a difference in the lives of people with disabilities and also older adults. We're very excited about this opportunity, what it means, and we're looking at building a state-of-the-art facility for also providing education of PCAs from throughout the state of Minnesota, our facility. We're very excited about the difference that we make, the contribution that we're making. We're very excited because thinking about PCAs, it has the highest percentage of diverse workers, highest percentage of women workers as well. And we're very excited about our role. We're deeply grateful to Representative Mariani for offering House File 3221. Madam Chair, I will defer to you, back to you, and saving some time here and your committee as well.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bethke Gomez. We appreciate it very much. And we'll give extra consideration because you give us time. Thank you, Representative Mariani. This sounds like an exciting project, and especially for so many people with diversities and disabilities that need a hand up sometimes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, for your consideration.
Ms. Nash, did something happen on the elevator?
I believe the elevator is functioning.
The next thing on the agenda is House File 3445, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be a woman of few words in interest of time. I'm pleased to introduce House File 3445 for WeWin Institute. It's a $1.5 million cash allocation for building. Right now, WeWin has no place of its own for its programming. I'll tell you about WeWin. I met them a few years ago when I was invited to an event, and I went expecting a nice time. And what happened, I will never forget that night. It was an evening of youth presenting on inventors, Black inventors that they had studied and researched. and the information was good. But what was just so amazing to me was the energy in the room, the power in the room, the love and pride in the room. I'll never forget that evening. And since then, I have done everything I can to stay connected with WeWin and to help bring assets to them so that their founder, Titi Layo Bediako, who you'll hear from today, can continue to do her work. So with that, I'd like to introduce a short video and turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you very much. Are you doing the video? Okay.
Here it is.
You don't want me to do the tech.
I'm Titi Layo Bediako, founder and executive director of WeWin Institute. WeWin was founded in 1996, and so we're 25 years old, and our mission is dedicated to the academic and social success of all children.
I started WeWin in third grade, so I've been there probably about 10 years. I'm now a sophomore in college. WeWin has been the best thing that has ever happened to me. I felt like as a kid that I wasn't showed enough attention to, and WeWin gave me the attention that I needed to separate from others to grow.
So in the last 25 years, we have supported the success of over 5,000 students, kindergarten through 12th grade. Our focus has primarily been Minneapolis, so we have worked in almost every school in Minneapolis, and we've helped to create academic and social successes.
WeWin provides a few things that I think are important. One, a space for quality education, and then a space just to feel safe and to feel welcome and to feel wanted. I feel like as a poor Black kid growing up, those were the two things that I didn't have readily available all the time. Somewhere where I felt like I could achieve academically, but also nurture my emotional state of mind. And WeWin is just an excellent place for that. TT she's a mentor of mine, and she's taught me so much about Black history, about being Black, about being a person for others, servicing the community. So WeWin is just an amazing, amazing space and place.
Our big
Hello, this is Titi Layo Bediako, and it's an honor being in front of you this morning. And I think our video said most in terms of what WeWin stands for. And I just want to reiterate the fact that WeWin has been around for 25 years, and our focus is the academic and social success of all children, with a large focus on language arts. Black children are having difficulty reading. Minneapolis Public Schools only has 18% of our children are reading at grade level. As a result of that, WeWin started a program called WeWin When We Read, which distributes books by Black authors and illustrators throughout Minneapolis and St. Paul in terms of creating an excitement for reading. And another new initiative of WeWin is called WeWin When Black Students Graduate, because such a large percentage of high school seniors are not graduating on time. So our initiative started last summer with a combination of community and school partnership. So thank you very much. And I'm going to turn it over to Cheryl, who is a supporter and volunteer with WeWin.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Titi.
Ms. Parasegal?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Titi. I will say simply that WeWin, I would agree with Representative Ryer that it's a transformative experience for those of us who've been lucky enough to become involved in the mission of this organization. I want to emphasize that this bonding bill will provide the capital for WeWin to purchase their own building for the first time in their 25-year history, which means they can not only continue to serve schools in the school district and in the buildings, but they can actually expand the programming that they've provided to the community at large, which they now do through partnerships and leased space. So thank you for your consideration. This space will provide stability. It will provide a sense of place. It will provide a sense of belonging, and it will deepen that sense of pride and joy in learning and in community that we win so beautifully grows in every child and every family member who walks through the door. Thank you.
Ms. Parasigo, do you have a building picked out?
We do, but it's pending based on this bonding bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Breyer. I can understand your excitement for We Win.
And thank you, committee, for your consideration for this important project.
House File 3663, Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you to the chair and thank you to the committee for hearing this project. House File 3663 appropriates $4 million in cash to Phyllis Wheatley Center to rebuild Camp Parsons. The funding will go towards rehabilitating the camp by redeveloping the trails and renovating the buildings to revitalize a place where children get an opportunity to spend time in nature. The camp ran from the 1950s to the 1990s, and it's time to provide an experience for more kids to see the beauty of Minnesota. The camp has been a staple in the community, allowing young people, including some of our own colleagues, a chance to experience a different environment and learn about the earth and other sciences. My testifier today will discuss more about the importance of revitalizing this camp and its importance to young people in our community. And with that, I'll turn it to my testifier, Madam Chair.
Ms. Burks.
Good morning, good morning. Thank you so much. Thank you, Representative Abaje, for your support on this. Madam Chair Murphy, Chair Lee, and members of the House Capital Investment Committee, thank you for considering the $4 million cash investment that we're requesting towards the restoration of Phyllis Wheatley Community Center's camp, Camp Catherine Parsons, which is located in Watertown, Minnesota. My name is Suzanne Fuller Burks, and I'm the Executive Director of Phyllis Wheatley Community Center, located in North Minneapolis. Phyllis Wheatley was founded in 1924, is one of the oldest African-American nonprofit organizations in Minnesota. For more than 66 years, we have owned and operated the 106-acre camp in Watertown, Minnesota. The camp was named after Catherine Parsons, who gifted the camp to us to focus on disadvantaged, underrepresented, at-risk youth to ensure they had a quality outdoor enrichment experience. We believe investing in the camp will reverse the underrepresentation as well as the underinvestment in these types of programs and experiences, particularly for African-American youth in North Minneapolis and at-risk youth in general. We strongly believe that camping experiences will address three critical areas that we're all concerned about. First, crime and safety. The camp will provide short-term experiences that will have long-term life-changing benefits. And I just point to two of your colleagues, one current, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, and former Senator Jeff Hayden, who both experienced the camp as youth. The second is the achievement gap. The camp will provide enrichment programs designed with our partners, such as the Science Museum of Minnesota, which is intentionally designed to address the achievement gaps, especially in STEAM. Third is climate change. The camp will expose youth to the importance of conservation, and we hope it will spark their interest in becoming environmentalists to protect our precious resources, such as water, trees, and more. In addition to the benefits young people have received at the camp, it boasts many unique environmental characteristics. And in recognition of that, we entered into an environmental conservation easement with the Minnesota Land Trust to protect 90% of the land from any future development and preserve the environmental integrity of the camp into perpetuity. Generations of African-American youth have spent summers at the camp, and it is considered a unique piece of Minneapolis's, especially Minneapolis's, African-American cultural heritage. Sadly though, beginning in the late 1980s, the camp began to deteriorate. Major infrastructure failures resulted from more than decades of deferred maintenance. These infrastructure failures and maintenance issues forced the camp to halt all of the activities in the late 1990s, early 2000s. Restoring the camp will cost approximately $5.5 million before it can provide year-round programming, including camping, environmental education, youth violence diversion, and STEAM education. Of the $5.5 million budget, we are requesting a cash investment of $4 million from the legislature. The remaining $1.5 million will be secured through the combination of proceeds from our conservation easement, from the land trust and philanthropic investments. The following are confirmed partners: Mortenson Construction, Snow Crowley Architects, Cohen and Partner Landscape Architects, Ask, Frederickson and Byron, PPA, and more. We are also in early discussions with public and nonprofit programmatic partners about how to reactivate the camp and incorporate their programs once the capital fundraising is complete. This is an important time in Phyllis Wheatley's history as well as the camp's. Phyllis Wheatley nears 100 years old in 2024. And it is important that we advance our new mission, which is to create pathways for individuals to discover their strengths and take control of their futures. Likewise, the restoration of the camp will allow us to continue our work to help at-risk youth to provide access to unique, culturally enriching, especially camping experiences. And that to that end, we also see that building relationships with our neighbors in Carver County, Watertown, Minnesota, is critical to that mission and experiences. Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the House Capitol Committee, for your time and support of this request. If you have any questions, I have with me now today Laura Danielson, who's a board member and chair of the Camp Committee, Brad Bourne, who's the interim chair of Camp Operations, and Matt Tierney, who is over ASC and then is the lead initial contract construction and design consultant. That's it.
Seeing none, thank you very much. You included all the relevant details that we have to have, like the $4 million cash and you're raising the rest.
We're going to raise the rest, believe me.
Great. That's very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We will hold House File 3663 over for possible inclusion. Next, we have House File 3790, Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the next bill I have is House File 3790. Continuing on with the theme of supporting our youth, this bill is requesting $2 million in programming, but as well as $60 million in capital investment to acquire a property, design, and construct a new youth center facility. And it would also be a cash investment. North Minneapolis has limited places where young people can go after school, be around trusted adults, and have a safe place to play and learn. The state's investment in our young people should start at the beginning. We cannot wait until we need to intervene after something has gone wrong. Having a dedicated youth center, especially one that can complement the burgeoning programs across the district and the city, will be beneficial to positive outcomes for so many young people in the city, but particularly those in North Minneapolis. With that, I'll turn it over to my two testifiers who can explain more.
Mr. Flowers.
Madam Chair, my name is Clarence Hightower, and I'll go first
and then Al will
jump in. Thank you so much, Representative Abaje, for your support of this bill. Madam Chair, members, again, my name is Clarence Hightower, and I serve as Executive Director of Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County. We are here to discuss very quickly an initiative that was envisioned by youth for you. That initiative is called the Rosa Parks Center for the Development of African American Youth. This center is will be a tripartite initiative that brings together three very distinct partners. The first partner will be the Minneapolis Public Schools. Well, they will sell to this initiative one of their surplus buildings in North Minneapolis for $1. in addition to the Minneapolis Public Schools, we are very hopeful that the legislature will become a partner in this initiative. And we're asking for $2 million again for programming and $6 million to re-envision the school that we would get from the public schools and create this youth center. The third partner in this initiative will be longstanding community organizations that have already contributed mightily to the work in the various communities. One such community organization will be the YMCA of Twin Cities. The YMCA of the Twin Cities has a program that's been running for 75 years that have geared principally to white students. We will take that program, it's called Youth in Government, and create a program called Black Youth in Government. And we will endeavor to have 300 young Black kids have the same experience that each of you are having as legislators, and possibly follow in your footsteps. The second longstanding partner is Summit Academy, and they have endeavored to bring to this youth center a STEM district in North Minneapolis. It is that kind of excitement and involvement that gets our blood pressure flowing. Now let me turn it over to my partner and the visionary of this youth center, Al Flowers.
Mr. Flowers.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. My name is Alpha Flowers Jr. I'm the project coordinator of the Young People Task Force, which is a wing of the Unity Community Mediation Team, which focus on transparency, transformation, consequences, and accountability, not only for the police, but also for our community as well. And as a Young People Task Force, we went around the city of Minneapolis to talk to some of our young people in Minneapolis to see what it is that we can do for them to help make them feel more safe and more lovable. And the first thing that they came up with was they wanted a youth center inside of North Minneapolis. What they wanted in that youth center is a place of refuge and safety where equity and reconciliation are standards, youth aspirations are cultivated and celebrated, and ADOS African-American youth are inspired, encouraged, and guided to holistic, self-sustaining futures of economic opportunity. We're hoping that we can empower and arm our youth with long-term tools needed to thrive as leaders and ambassadors of the community, peace and transformation, along with self-sustaining capacity to achieve economic self-sufficiency and entrepreneur independence. When we were talking to our young people, we were able to identify 7 service components that our young people feel as though is going to help them get to the next level in life. Them 7 service components was 1, self-actualization and value. 2, reconciliation and mediation. 3, economic development. 4, education. 5, holistic health and wellness. 6, recreation and creative expression. And 7, being administrative leadership. We also was able to identify 10 major center principles that we're going to use within this center. Some of them center principles are strength-based, so to make sure that we don't try to put the circle into the triangle box, to work on our young people's strength. Another thing is diversity, equity, and inclusion, that to make sure our young people can have that diversity. And another thing was trust in adult relationships. Our young people don't feel as though they have enough trusting adults relationships, so we want to try to change that for them and bring them trusting adult relationships back to them. One of the things that we try to do is we try to make sure that our young people are heard. And when you think about, we had over 66 juvenile victims that were shot. We had 82% of our 600 people who were shot in Minneapolis were African-American. We had over 75% of the murder victims was African-American. And we had at least 10 people under the age of 16 that was murdered due to gun violence last year. So we hope that this center and this opportunity for our young people is a place where they can have safety, a place where they can have refuge. The most greatest thing I love about this is our young ADOS African-American youth are taking their destiny into their own hands. They identified the gaps themselves, our younger people, and they figured out the solutions in them 7 service components that we have right now to help them get to the next level of success, to be prosperous, and to have an entrepreneur and administrative leadership ability within our community in North Minneapolis. A safer Minneapolis is a safer Minnesota. I thank you, and I'll open it up for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flowers. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a quick comment. My ears perked up when Mr. Hightower talked about the program Black Kids in Government. And this is something that I think most folks are aware. I have been emphasizing for years the importance of knowing how the system operates. And I'm glad to hear that Mr. Hightower and this organization is promoting that within their system. So thank you. Appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you so much, Representative.
Dr. Hightower, have you concluded your remarks?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. Okay. I wish that question. Yes, ma'am.
Representative Agbaje, will you conclude?
Yes, I have concluded. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for bringing these exciting programs to us. Representative Moran, House File 3371.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair and members. House File 3371 is the Keystone Community Service request for $4 million in state funds to construct and renovate their acquired site on University Avenue in St. Paul to serve all with access to healthy food and other services. As we know or may not know, 1 in 11 Minnesotans were experiencing food insecurity in 2019. That number increased to 1 in 9 in 2020. Black, Hispanic, and Indigenous Minnesotans are twice as likely to experience food insecurity as white Minnesotans. The need for food shelf support continues to rise. There was a 50% increase in participation at Keystone site from August to October of last year. 50% of participants struggle with transportation, 42% are disabled or care for a disabled family member, and 30% have chronic health issues. Nearly 6,000 older adults, 65 plus, in Ramsey County have incomes at or below the federal poverty level. And another 8,000 plus seniors have annual incomes that are considered to be low income. As food prices rises, access to healthy food becomes more difficult, as well as other barriers such as transportation that would make it hard for seniors to get the food they need to stay healthy. This funding is critical for Keystone to serve the rising needs that we are seeing. Madam Chair, I have a testifier here with me to talk more about the project.
All right. Is that Mary McEwen?
It is.
Okay. President McEwen.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair Murphy and Chair Fu Lee and the members of the committee. My name is Mary McEwen, and I am president of Keystone Community Services, and I'm excited to share with you how the funding request for our new community food site is going to bring more food to more people. I came before this committee last year as part of a coalition of four food shelves that were looking for infrastructure support. Since that time, Community Pathways of Steele County has raised the money they need to complete their project. 360s Community in Dakota County has put their project on hold, and Southern Anoka County Assistance is working in partnership with Hunger Solutions to secure funds for their project. I want to thank this committee and Representative Hewitt for their advocacy for us and their support of our coalition. I also want to thank Representative Moran for sponsoring our bill this year. She is a tremendous supporter of the neighbors who participate at Keystone programs. Keystone is a human service organization that's been serving the community for over 80 years, and 80% of the people who participate in our programs come from BIPOC communities. We are the largest food shelf provider in the East Metro, serving over 32,000 people, including youth, families, and seniors every year with food. We operate two food shelves, two food mobiles, which are food shelves on wheels that go out to the community and go to high rises and libraries and places like that. We also have a grocery delivery program that we started during the pandemic to support older adults and people with disabilities. And we provide large scale food distribution for community members. We are currently operating out of four very small sites, and we need more space, and there's no more space available at these sites. House File 3371 is a cash appropriation request for $4 million to help us renovate and equip a 20,000 square foot community food site that will support 50,000 people with healthy food, which is nearly 65% of the people living in poverty in Ramsey County. At this new site, we will be able to acquire and distribute over 4 million pounds of food every year into the community. That's double what we're able to do now out of our current sites. The food is available through federal commodities, through our partners like Second Harvest, and through grocery store food rescue. We simply don't have the space or the structure to get it out to the community. Our new community food site will function more like a community center, and it's on University Avenue. It'll offer more community programming, a large food market space, and a garage to house our food mobiles. It's also going to revitalize a section of University Avenue near the Fairview Light Rail Station. The need for food services is increasing, and more people are turning to Keystone every month as their everyday expenses like food, gas, and utilities are increasing faster than their income. Every month, we are providing food for over 700 new people. These are people that have never come to Keystone for support. Using a food shelf helps keep older adults and families stable. It helps them stay housed, and it helps them maintain a stable household. On average, our Keystone participants come three times a year. They can come every month and more often if they need, but they truly just come when they need that support. The total cost of our project is $8.5 million, and in the last 18 months, Keystone has raised $3.4 million, including $1 million from the City of St. Paul. We are continuing to fundraise for this project. Our community has overwhelmingly supported this project, and participants have been involved in the design. Our design partner formula helped create opportunities for participants to be part of a survey and also be part of design workshops so that this community center is really something that the community has helped us put together, which is very important. In your packet, you'll have 10 letters of support from Second Harvest, the food group, Hallie Q. Brown Community Center, one of our partners in providing support, Interfaith Action, Department of Indian Work, another partner, the City of Lauderdale, the City of Roseville, St. Michael's Lutheran Church, Bethlehem Lutheran of the Midway, Union Park District Council, and Alliance. Our project is shovel ready. An investment of $4 million will allow us to start construction on the site in September and begin operating out of the new site in March of 2023. Fran Brown is with me today, and he's one of the 5,000 older adults that Representative Moran mentioned that need support. He's with me today to share how his participation in the food shelf has helped stabilize him and allowed him to have a healthy lifestyle. Madam Chair, can I introduce Fran Brown, please?
You may, but we're behind 1 minute.
Okay.
Good morning and happy St. Patrick's Day. My name is Fran Brown. I am a participant in Keystone's food shelf program, and I'm here to share with you how important Keystone is to me and so many other people in our community. I have worked and supported myself all of my adult life until a few years ago, when my circumstances changed suddenly. After the Great Recession of 2008, I lost my job. During this time, I had a bad motorcycle accident that changed my life in ways I could not have predicted. I have a very, very limited income, and food is one of my biggest expenses. I never expected to be someone who Googled where to find the local food shelf, but I knew I needed some extra help. When I found out that the Keystone Midway food shelf was nearby, I decided to stop by. Now, keep in mind, it is not easy for me to ask for help. I was worried about how I would be treated. After my first trip to the Keystone food shelf, I was simply amazed. I was treated with so much dignity. The staff and volunteers were so welcoming and helpful. and I received a bounty of fresh, wonderful food items that I used for my meals that day. Since 2017, I visit the food shelf on and on when I needed a little extra help. During the pandemic, Keystone started a new food shelf delivery service, and this program is a blessing for me. With my back pain from the accident, it was getting challenging for me to carry my grocery items home. So I inquired if I would be eligible for this new delivery program, and I was. Now, a wonderful Keystone volunteer delivers my food packages directly to my apartment every month. The pandemic has really changed so much for everyone and made things even harder for a lot of people like me. I count on Keystone, and I know many of my neighbors count on Keystone too. Many times people are in situations they never imagined themselves to be in, and I'm telling you that when times are tough, there needs to be a place in the community where people can get food and other help. I urge you to support Keystone's request and help make this new community food site a place for me and my neighbors can go when we need a little extra help. Thank you for letting me share what Keystone means to me, and Erin Gopra.
Thank you so much, Mr. Brown. Ms. McEwen, we appreciate your testimony and we remember it from last spring, and you've got great leadership for many people and very brave. You're very brave to establish a site that's going to serve 50,000 people on a regular basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Representative Moran, House File 3658.
All right, so House File.
You have to make up time.
I know, pressure is on. House File 3658. So the Black Gate will be a Black-owned and operated community asset that will contribute to economic independence for artists and entrepreneurs who have historically been excluded. The Black Gate is an economic development near a major commercial corridor in a historically underinvested neighborhood that will create temporary and permanent jobs, income-generating opportunities for artists and entrepreneurs. And the Black Gate will have a commercial kitchen to support culinary, the entrepreneurs, support community events and activities. And it will create a community building opportunity that supports safer neighborhoods. The Black Gate will be, in general, a self-sustaining short-term and long-term rental and earned income that will provide a model for other developments focused on preserving the work of artists of color and creating economic benefits in disinvested communities. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifier.
And is that?
That would be Setu.
Setu Jones?
Thank Setu?
That's me.
Yes.
Okay. Please speak. Tell us about your project in 2 minutes. Oh, 1 minute.
No, I promise
quickly as you as quickly as possible, because you're only stealing from Representative Moran's last bill.
Now, I'm going to go very quickly, Madam Chair. I thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair Murphy, Chair Lee, members of the Capital Investment Committee, and a special thank you to Representative Moran for sponsoring House File 3658 and supporting artists in her district and throughout St. Paul. I am honored also to be testifying with so many other deserving initiatives. I am a fourth generation Minnesotan based in Frogtown with a 50-year artistic career. I've created over 40 public artworks located in and on schools, infrastructure, art centers, and businesses. Even with tremendous challenges, this community has been kind to me And the Black Gate will be an opportunity for me to give back to this community and build the strength and capacity of other artists to thrive and succeed against many odds. The Black Gate will be a Black-owned and operated community asset that will contribute to the economic independence of artists and entrepreneurs who have historically been excluded. Located in the Frogtown neighborhood of St. Paul, the Black Gate is an economic development project near University Avenue, just two blocks away. Thank you, James, my fellow testifier, James Garrett, one of the managing partners of Formula, has pulled up this image for us to check out here. And
is just this going to be many floors?
It'd be three floors, ma'am. It will be it will provide temporary jobs, design and development and construction, 7 permanent jobs. 2 to 3 artists will be there on a yearly basis to build their economic and social capacity. It'll provide even much needed housing for working artists. It will provide self-sustaining via short-term and long-term rentals and earned income with an investment of a $2.5 million cash appropriation from the state of Minnesota that will go toward our $10 million goal. The Black Gate will be shovel-ready within 12 months. I think I was able to get through that in like 2 minutes there, Madam Chair.
Yes, and did you say people are going to be living in this building also?
Yes, if you look at that image, you'll see that it is 2 floors. The first floor will be a commercial kitchen and studio space. You can see James's arrow there. And above it will house a library that will contain my personal papers and archives, and 2 apartments, all on Kent Street and Charles on a lot that we own. Hopefully we'll be able to even acquire more properties around it with this appropriation.
And what is the ask?
The ask is $2.5 million. Of a total of $10 million goal.
Right. Okay. I wanted to clarify that. Thank you. What's your time commitment to the Black Gate?
You know, of course, I would like to build this thing tomorrow, but hopefully we will be shovel ready within 12 months. In fact, James Garrett.
For interrupting, because we are behind.
But, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's not you. It's my questions. After this is established and built, what is your time commitment to it and to the programming and to the, are you just going to show your paintings or are you going to be working with the community?
No, not at all. In fact, it will not really be an exhibition space for me or a studio space for me. It'll be a space for other artists. So I will be committed to it for the whole next season of my life. But this will be administered and run by a nonprofit with an executive director.
Thanks so much.
To launch this.
Yeah. Thanks for your clarification of those questions. And let us proceed with the next bill now, but you have sold us.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We still have much work to do.
Yes, we do, both sides.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Representative Moran, House File 3659.
Well, Madam Chair, my last bill is no doubt just as great as the other two. So House File 3659 is for acquisition, design, and construction of an innovation center for community gathering, career development, and supportive housing. It will make educational opportunities for career advancement and workforce development more accessible to the broader community. It will become a community incubator where staff and partners will have a safe and productive place for youth and emerging leaders to live, to learn, to grow, and to connect. And finally, there's a housing component to this that will provide supportive housing and affordable housing to future educators and young adults committed to careers of service. And with that, Madam Chair, I would let my testifier present that vision for you.
Mr. Sana.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll try to be brief. Thank you for the opportunity. It's clear listening today that the world needs a lot more programming space and opportunities for our families and our kids. You know, we're committed to building a multicultural area. We've proven we can work across cultural barriers to serve all. We would leverage our existing funding in our Dreamline program, that is an education program across the state, to have a central hub where we can train teachers and students across the state. We would also have a nonprofit incubator center where we can use our expertise that allowed us to grow to support other young agencies as they look to develop resources and share space with us. The community is also short of community space and meeting space, especially for cultural organizations. So we would be able to provide that. And we'd also be able to provide 36 to 40 units of housing for people that serve the community. So we have a teacher pathway program. So while you're working to become a teacher, or if you decide to be an AmeriCorps worker or work for another nonprofit, and you're willing to serve and give service in your life, and we want to make sure that you can afford to do it. Everyone deserves a chance to give, and time is the most important thing, but some communities truly can't afford it. So we want to bring all these people together to serve the community in a central meeting space. We're asking for $5 million of a $12 million project. We've proven in the past that we know how to leverage something into raising more money, and we're confident that we can raise the rest through community partnerships and really build something that the community can be proud of and leverage our resources like we have before in the past with the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moran.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to thank you, Representative Chair Lee, for the opportunity to present these bills. That it really is all about how do we continue to create healthy, safe, and thriving communities by investing in our youngest population, but also serving our oldest. So I just want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Moran. We appreciate your work, too, a lot. And would you please, now we have a little bit of time, would you please come with me and help find Mr. Chair? From now on, if you see him going on an elevator, will you ask him to go to a stairway and walk up, because he could reach his office a lot faster?
I appreciate that, Chair Murphy. Members, House File 2905 is cash appropriations for Appetite for Change to help them with a site selection and pre-design. And with me, we have the president and one of the staff over at Appetite for Change. And I'll just turn it over to them, Chair Murphy.
Oh, I had no idea we had Appetite for Change on our agenda. Thank you. Mr. Powell, President Powell.
Good morning. Thank you, Vice Chair Murphy and Chair Lee. My name is Michelle Horowitz. I am the Vice President of Innovation and one of the co-founders of Appetite for Change. My co-founder and colleague, Tasha Powell, is also on the call, having some technical difficulties. So I know you all are very busy this morning, and I'm gonna not take up the full 6 minutes and give you back some of your time.
Thank you.
Yes, but thank you, Chair Lee, and to the committee. We are Appetite for Change. Our mission is to use food as a tool to build health, wealth, and social change. We are located in North Minneapolis. We have a number of programs and services that meet the needs of the community. And how we started our organization actually 10 years ago this month, we're 10 years old. We started with less than $10,000 in grant funding. We are now almost a $4 million organization. We employ hundreds of youth and adults in our various social enterprises and programs. You may know us best for Breaking Bread Cafe and Breaking Bread Catering, which is Breaking Bread Cafe is right next to the Minneapolis Public School headquarters on West Broadway in the Zara building, which was recently purchased by a community member, and we're very excited about that. However, our home for the last 7 years will no longer be able to be our home. We're working to make sure that the cafe stays, but our office and programming space is going to be repurposed for the new building. And we are seeking just over $500,000 in cash from this committee to assist us in taking our 10-year strategic vision, which has five pillars: community, health, wealth, youth, and dissemination, to serve the community needs in a space that can provide access to food, jobs, safe spaces for people to congregate, and access to knowledge and food in general. We run the West Broadway Farmers Market. The Farmers Market has had four locations over the last 11 years. It's really hard to access the Farmers Market when you're not exactly sure where it is. We need a permanent home for our food access programming. Similarly, we helped create a food business incubation program with Neon. And I know that they're seeking support for their food business incubator. One thing that food businesses need, and we know this firsthand after working with many small startup food businesses, is they actually need a place to sell their products and to have a retail operation. And there are very few spaces in North Minneapolis for food businesses to actually reach the community. We are seeking pre-design support. So we are looking for support to work with a real estate consultant, as well as all of the phase one testing and site selection, design, architectural design, phase one environmental testing, basically everything up to the point of acquisition and construction. And we are just really excited about the possibility of having a space where people can access food, receive training and technical assistance for urban agriculture, have a farmer's market, have a place to access real food, local food, and to come together and build community through food. We've worked with many partners on the call. It's been so humbling to hear all of the amazing requests. We know that you all are going to get many more requests than you have funding for, but thank you so much for this opportunity to share our story. Yes, just thank you for this opportunity to be heard.
Thank you, Ms. Horowitz. And so your ask is $500,000 now, and then you'll be back when you have your planning and your study done.
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair. Our 10-year strategic vision is just being finalized, so this would allow us to convert that vision into the spaces and uses to find the right building on hopefully West Broadway to rehabilitate and or to construct, and that process would be completed before the next bonding year, and we would certainly be grateful to be able to come back and ask for support to construct the building. We have a number of sources of potential matching funds, but we can't get those matching funds, and we can't get to that point until we actually have our site, and we have our construction documents and our plans, so we can make a case for the full project. Okay, and you can see Tasha sitting in Breaking Bread Cafe, and we hope to see some of you there soon.
All right. And you've been before us the last year, right? With Representative Jordan?
Or we were wrong? Wonderful memory, Vice Chair Murphy. We were in front of the Legacy Committee with Representative Jordan, and we received legacy funds. And thank you, Chair Lilly, who I see here on the call, for supporting our Community Cooks program, which is sharing cultural heritage and bringing people together to learn and connect with their traditional food ways.
Okay. Different committee, same person, and food. It was all about food.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this challenge before us. House File 2905. This meeting is now adjourned.